How's he going to sound, Tim? How is he going to sound, Gaz?
Morning, boys.
Oh,
up and about. Rough. How are we on this great morning, on one of the greatest Monday mornings in history?
I got a message from Tim Sausage Gossage over there, Gaz. He said, wait to hear Gaz's voice. He's up and about. He's pumped.
No, I am indeed. Voice is okay. Been doing a lot of talking, not alcohol and fuel. I had a couple of beers yesterday with everyone and... Wow, where do we start? How long we got? Are we on until 3 or what?
Hey, congratulations, yeah, Gaz. It was fantastic. Some great TV afterwards with you and in the Melbourne rooms with Jacko and all the ex-players and the current players. It really was. I don't know how you felt, but it was fantastic to watch.
Well, I felt how I thought I'd feel, to be honest. How when I sat back and watched everyone else celebrating grand finals, and I've loved grand final day as a commentator, you see it right through, you watch the lap of honour and... You go down in the change rooms and you desperately hope that one day you'll get that experience. And that's exactly how it felt. It was every bit as good as I thought it would be. And then what a game. The way this game unfolded, it just had your heart jumping up and down all over the place. And in the blink of an eye, it was over and you could sit back and enjoy the last quarter.
I so know how to, what a great thing it is now, Gary, how teams go back out onto the ground post the grand final and sort of relive it, because... Once upon a time, it was like you went into the rooms after a grand final, and if you won, you sort of felt like everything was rushed because you had to leave the ground and then get to, you know, the function that was going to be held that night or whatever. And what you really wanted to do is you just wanted to sort of milk yourself in the actual emotion of what had just taken place, and you didn't really want to leave the ground. You wanted to stay there and enjoy it with the players. And that's exactly what they did again on Saturday night. And you were out there for a period of time.
Yeah, no, they made it. I think that was very much, if they were good enough to win, that they weren't going anywhere in a hurry. And when everyone had sort of gone and lights were sort of down a bit, they just wandered out, took some Eskies out and a few pizzas and had the music blaring and boys pulled some cigars out. And, yeah, I was lucky to be there for a while and it was as good a couple of hours as you could have. They were just so happy. I was sat with Adam Uze and we talked the game through and I just kept peppering him with questions about these kids, you know, what they were like and who this bloke, you know, and got a great insight into where they're at. And no, I think that's the best moment. And then they went off and went crazy in the middle of Perth somewhere. I don't know where that was. And they're still going. They're still going strong. But no, great. That was a great thrill and a great moment.
What about the cup presentation, Gaz? How did that transpire for you?
Oh, it was great. I just stood there like a little kid. you just imagine any Melbourne supporter being lucky enough and privileged enough to stand and get, you know, to see it all at close quarters and the emotion and everything else. And... yeah, handing that over, something I'll remember forever.
Did it affect you in the way that you anticipated or thought that it would affect you? Was it better?
Better. It's better. It's just a sense that it's, you know, this is done and no one can take it away from you, and you're looking at these blokes who are going to be they're premiership players for the rest of their lives. It doesn't matter what else happens to them. So they're premiership players and for the club, you know, it's just such a big, significant day, and there's a relief mixed in with the emotion of just how thrilled you are for them all. And they're in great shape, their footy club. Gee whiz, I've spent some time with Gary Peart over the last week or so, and, you know, all of a sudden a team that's battled and struggled with, you know, financially and all sorts of things, they're in good nick.
There are leaders and there are leaders, I think. Like, you know, guys can be captain and, you know, they can be a really good, solid captain. But then there's somebody like a Max Gorn. What's impressed you most, given that you've been a little bit closer to the club in recent times, has impressed you most about Max?
I think he's a great observer of what's going on, so he knows, you know, exactly how to react and respond at any given time. I think part of the leadership is having an awareness of what's happening around you. And even yesterday, while they're having their drinks and their lunch at the pub and all that sort of stuff, he was just sort of sitting back for the first hour and just casting an eye over it. And it looked to me like he was going, right, let's just make sure we're all under control here and let's make sure no one's getting out of control. And then he looked fatherly to me. But then he can change, as you saw in some, I'm sure you saw the vision when he was on the shoulders. I don't know who he's on the shoulders of, drinking out of the champagne bottle. He's got both gears, but... No, he's been unbelievable. Absolutely extraordinary.
He was extraordinary in the lead-up with the amount of how he was such the face and that through that two-week period. He had a funny game. He had some really influential moments, and we've talked about Jackson. Just before I go and hand over to you, Gaz, A, being there, what the difference that's made for your experience of all this, but just the way you, and you've said how fortunate you are, being able to represent all the old players. It's been, and the fans as well, I know, but it's been just so stark how from big names to, you know, guys that played two or three games with the Ds, you've seen them all pop up somewhere on social media or heard about them via you or Ox or, you know, the WhatsApp groups that have been going off. It's been incredible.
It has, and you know, that's the thing, as Whispier knows, is that past playing groups, you've got to work hard to keep them together. And, you know, when you've got generational groups, it's bloody difficult, but they've done an unbelievable job. And sometimes it needs something like this. Players can get self-conscious, but I think this was so overwhelmingly positive, they didn't matter who they were, they were just all piling in. You know, from the 200, 300, 250 games, 300 David Neitz, right down to blokes that played for one or two games. You know, they were every bit as excited. And I reckon, I would imagine, that's representative of our audience of Melbourne supporters out there and everyone else. They'd be over the moon. And I just can't imagine what Saturday night was like.
And did you think he had a good strut, Tim, as he walked up to present the medal, Gaz, or not?
Strut? I didn't want to fall over.
I thought it was magnificent.
It was.
Winding up Basil, though, I thought that was a great idea, too.
Yeah, Tim's blamed you for Basil not giving Simon Goodwin an opportunity to speak.
I thought that you might have been winding Basil up like you do when I'm on the quiz. That's what I said this morning. Yeah.
And did he also announce the Norm Smith Medal winner?
Yes,
that was Andrew Embley's job.
No, he's the mayor. He can do whatever he likes.
I think we've found that protocol changed. A few people have said that in the Richmond ones, that protocol changed.
Let's start with, I think I said the father of Neil. That's how well I'm travelling this morning. The daughter of the great Neil Danaher, Beck Danaher, has been good enough to join us. Beck, how's that?
Hello, how are you going?
Well, I'm going as well as you are, I reckon. Tell us, what was it like in the Danaher house?
It was interesting highs and lows. That second quarter scared everyone, but what an incredible win by the Ds. Dad was smiling ear to ear. And you might have seen that post on social media. I think he would have climbed into the TV to celebrate with the boys.
Did he start to get a little bit nervous, a little bit worried in that second quarter, Beck?
I reckon he was nervous from the get-go. I was sitting next to him, and I reckon within the first 2 minutes of the game, he was up and down. It got very, very quiet in the living room in that second quarter.
Is he still got the coach in him? Does he start swinging changes and making moves?
Well, I know he's got a colourful vocabulary, that's for sure. But we were looking towards him in that last quarter. We were like, oh, are we safe here? Are we home? Are we ready to celebrate? And he gave us a nod, you know, about, well and truly safe in that last 7 minutes. So we were pretty excited.
So what stage during that last quarter did he have the victory sip?
Oh, that's a good question. They were absolutely flying. But you always do wait for the Doggies. They're such strong opponents. So we were just sort of waiting for them to, you know, kick a few goals and come back. But he did give us that nod about that 7-10 minute mark and saying, I think we're home.
Beck, we just wanted to let everyone know exactly what was going on in your house. There's been so much love and interest for your dad. And I know, speaking of the boys over the last couple of days, Maxi Gawn said his quote was just ringing around the room before the game. So he's had a big part in this. So thanks for jumping on this morning.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Beck.
Beck Danaher there.
Right now, we're welcoming the coach of the Essendon Football Club. Ben Rutten is with us. He's here for the new Kia Niro electric SUV range. Ben, great to have you with us as we look back on Grand Final weekend. How are you going?
Yeah, g'day, Haro, and Tim. It's great to be in here.
What have you done the last few weeks since your season finished?
Yeah, look, it's been it's a bit of an abrupt halt to the season. I mean, when you're getting, when you make the finals, you're going flat out and you're putting everything you can into that game, and then it comes to a screaming halt pretty quick, and then you kind of turn your eyes to getting the players out and doing some end of season reviews, and then I suppose with the environment at the moment with COVID, we're encouraged to do a fair bit from home, so it's been a fair bit of work on the phone, and just trying to get a bit of downtime as well.
How do you watch the grand final then, and indeed the final series, and do you use it with your play? Are you making notes that you can then go back and show your players and that sort of thing?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, we're watching the finals. It's obviously something that we're trying to do at Essendon, is certainly build a sustainable brand of footy that's going to stack up at this time of year. And We're certainly watching the other teams and the coaches likewise about watching what the other teams are doing, how they're playing, so that probably when we get back to work in probably late October, that we're starting to look at what the other teams were doing and what parts of our game we need to continue to evolve. But it was certainly a great final series, and I think in the end we saw the best two teams over the course of the whole season in the grand final, and it was a fantastic game to watch.
All coaches are bowerbirds. They like to beg, borrow and steal from everybody else. What would you like to take away from the Melbourne game plan?
Look, I think they're just really well balanced across the board. I think they're really strong behind the ball. They've got some great ball winners, great ruckmen, and then ahead of the ball, there's some real excitement up there. And I think they were really electric and really overwhelmed the Dogs at various stages throughout that game.
Did you see the game turning the way that it did in any way?
Probably not. I mean, I certainly thought, having played the Bulldogs a couple of times over the last month or 6 weeks for us, I certainly knew they'd bounce back after that first quarter, and I wasn't surprised early in that that second quarter how they bounced back, and the game was basically in the balance again then. But I certainly didn't see the turnaround to that degree. I wasn't surprised that Melbourne played some really strong footy, but it was a real avalanche really in that second half.
Just Bevo moving Treloar into the middle. So that would have been probably on his what if kind of list. He pulled that pretty quick, didn't he? Because we haven't really seen Treloar in the middle much at all lately. So they were obviously really worried about what was happening in there.
Yeah, well, the game was getting away from him reasonably quickly there, wasn't it, in that first term. And I'm sure Bevo didn't expect him to have the impact he did early in that second quarter. But him and Bontempelli as well really just quelled that momentum and got the game back on the Bulldogs' terms. And we probably haven't seen the Bulldogs, being run over like that in the second half like they were. And in particular around the centre bounce, that was seemed to be the real catalyst for Melbourne to get that momentum going.
Does it shift you philosophically, and I don't even know what your philosophy is around the two ruckmen, but the fact that Jackson was such an influential player alongside Gawn, do you think that's going to be a shift in the mindset of AFL coaches across the league as well?
Yeah, look, a little bit. I mean, that's a discussion we've had a fair bit. We had Drapes miss a fair chunk of the season, and Andrew Phillips stepped in and did a mighty job. Nick Bryan played one game in there as well. So we certainly had that discussion a fair bit around whether we play two rucks. We were also getting a fair bit of value out of Peter Wright. And I think the game probably against the Bulldogs was a real highlight for us, where we had Drapes and Peter Wright playing in tandem, and Peter obviously hitting the scoreboard that day. But I think certainly at least one of your ruckmen needs to be able to have a significant impact playing forward.
Does it make a difference if we go to 23 players? Like, there's talk that the sub will just, become a 23rd player. So if that happens, do you think that then teams will always pick a second ruck? Like, could it, or more likely to?
Well, I think that's probably where it will go. I mean, you can afford to probably have a ruckman go on and off the bench that way, providing you've got that extra number on the bench. So that'll be interesting. I mean, you want the ruck to come on and have an impact, and certainly the way Melbourne use their rucks, they certainly got maximum impact out of them.
Handy if you've got a player like Jackson, though, isn't it? He's just as athletic as
well. Well, he's mobile too. That's the thing. Like, when the ball hits the ground, Draper is like that too. Like, he's another ground level player once the ball hits the ground.
Yeah, look, he is, and that's the thing. We've probably got looking in a couple of years, we've got Zach Reed and also Nick Cox, who are 200 odd centimetre runners, ball users. So they're probably in a similar ilk to Jackson that Melbourne used. So we're certainly going to have some options, I think, moving forward. And Harry Jones as well, who's a tall, mobile ruckman, but you can see him just drifting and playing around the ground like another midfielder at times.
You know, when the momentum shifts in the way that it did, and there was big momentum shifts in this game, but none bigger than the third quarter shift to Melbourne. You got Petrarca on fire. In the coach's box, what is it? What's your checklist then? What is it that you're trying to do next? Is get your hands on the ball, win the next center. What's the most important thing post that?
Yeah, look, just getting hold of the ball. I mean, I think the most, the really difficult thing since the 666 rule at center bounce is the, hey, you can't really do too much at center bounces. And I think that's where we saw Melbourne get some real dominance. And I think we've done it at various stages, and we've been on the end of it at various stages throughout the year, that when momentum's going against you and it's around the centre clearances, that there's really not much you can do other than try and get hold of the ball and force another stoppage so you can actually reset the ground. And I think that's where Melbourne, they were able to hit the scoreboard, you know, big time in that third quarter through centre bounce. And as a coach, there's very little you can do to be able to stop the momentum there.
How can you explain momentum in general? I mean, it's in every sport, but particularly in that centre bounce, because it's a random event to a degree. And yet when a team gets in a roll, like Geelong did it to Melbourne in that round 23 match.
Yeah.
You remember that they won the game on the back of that at the end of the second quarter. And yet the Demons have been able to do it a couple of times in this final series, and particularly on Saturday night. And you go back and look at each individual one, and you kind of go, well, slightly different. He got the tap there, but they just had momentum and bang.
Yeah, that's right. And there's no real rhyme or reason to it sometimes. And it's just about the bounce of the ball. But once you get a bit of confidence up and you start moving, you get a bit more proactive and the ruckman starts getting a bit confident, like the opposition team, you've got so much space to work with, and you're constantly on the back foot and reacting to the opposition, and it probably snowballs from there.
Do you need a cool, some clubs call it, I don't know what you call the tagging, we used to call it the tag obviously, but the cooler type player that can actually go to somebody and spend some time on them, quieten them down if possible. Did the Bulldogs lack that in their inability to be able to shut Petrarca down in any way, did you think?
Yeah, look, I mean, they've got as good a stoppage players as anyone, the Bulldogs. That's the thing. They've got, you know, Bontepelli and Liberatore and McRae. Like, they've got players that have done similar jobs. You know, Dunkley as well.
Dunkley was on Oliver in that from about midway through that first quarter for a while. How long, but...
Well, yeah, I mean, Dunkley and Liberatore, if you're going to put a stoppage cooler, so to speak, on, they're as good as any. So the Bulldogs are well equipped in that area. But as I said, they've got the space, and Petrarca and Oliver, the power that those guys have got at the moment about being able to win the ball and get out from stoppage. I think we saw Petrarca do that throughout the whole series, get out of those centre bounces really powerfully and explosively. And it was really difficult to stop them at the source, but then also running away.
Well, Stringer's been your Petrarca in effect, hasn't he?
Yeah, and you know, Dustin Martin as well has probably led the charge there over a number of years, and Stringer's done it to some degree for us throughout the course of the season, Petrarca as well. So those really dynamic, explosive guys at centre bounce can be so effective.
The Goody, you know, the Simon Goodwin that you know, how would you categorise him?
Look, I'm not surprised at all to see Goody where he is at the moment. I think, he was the captain of the footy club the last few years of his playing career, and I could see then that he was really developing and growing and starting to think like a coach, working really closely with Neil Craig at the time. And the way he's gone on and you know, he's really driven. He sees the game. He wants to take the game to new places. And I'm certainly not surprised to see him where he is now, and it's fantastic to see him get the rewards.
Yeah, because I think Neil Craig said that he didn't see that he was going to be a coach until really sort of late in his playing career. And I guess that's probably the way they said about Damien Hardwick too, didn't they? None of the players thought he was going to be a coach until the last bit. When did you start thinking you might be a coach?
Yeah, well, I was probably a couple of years behind Goody, I suppose. I mean, I was in the leadership group and working really closely with Goody and was watching what he was doing and how he was kind of evolving his thinking and kind of developing his own little philosophy around football. And then, it was probably similar in the last two or three years. And I was pretty lucky that my last couple of years, I had a really young back line to work with. And we had Darren Milburn come in, who was a first-time coach as well. So he was really open for us kind of working together in coaching the young group of, you know, Brodie Smith, Luke Brown, Daniel Talia. He had a really young back line, Rory Laird back then as well. So a really young back line at Adelaide to work with. So in a lot of respects, I was starting to help evolve, and I wanted to leave the back line once I left Adelaide in a really strong position. And that was probably where I got that appetite for coaching and improving and helping other people.
And Simon Goodwin coaching from the boundary line in a grand final, you must have a little chuckle at that, given that at the start of this year when things weren't going so well, that you were being criticised for being on the bench and not showing that you're doing enough.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's each year, and you get there's different pros and cons to being down on the bench or up in the box. But
what do you tell us about what you get? But what do you miss when you're on the bench? What do you give up, and what confidence do you need to have in those that are upstairs?
Yeah, you probably, yeah, but you certainly don't see the game as well. And that can be good and bad. I mean, sometimes you can see everything and expect the players to see everything. Yeah, when you've got that bird's eye view and you can see things ahead of time, two or three players ahead of it, you can get a better understanding of momentum and who's having the impact and why. But certainly down at ground level, obviously, Goody obviously got a lot of trust in his assistant coaches, which we do as well. And you've got a better contact with the players, but you certainly don't see the game as well. And you can probably pick up the little strings of momentum a little bit easier when you're up in the box, I think.
Do we underestimate the evolution of a team and a game plan? And obviously David Teague lost his job at Carlton because they weren't able to implement enough defensive mechanisms in the way they played, that type of thing. The Goodwin team at Melbourne has been a team of evolving as well over a period of time, and they played differently this season than what they have previously. You're going through that yourself, coaching Essendon and implementing your own game plan the way that you want them to play. Does it take a lot longer than those of us on the outside of the game think it's going to take?
Yeah, look, it certainly does take some time. And don't forget, every week you're up against another team that's trying to pull you apart. And it's about building some confidence and continuity and cohesion amongst your playing group. And, I think we certainly saw that with us this year, is that the start of our season looked fairly different towards the end than it did at the end of the season. And I kind of knew that was going to be the case, and I'm sure it will be again next year, that early on in the season, you're really trying to embed the fundamental parts of your game and get some real solid parts of your game in place before you can start to evolve it as the season goes on. And once you pick up some game trends, and certainly I think Melbourne have done that really well this year. They've built a really strong contested brand of footy over the last few years, and they've probably stiffened up their defensive mechanisms over the last 12 months. And that's really starting to complement each other now, and have some real excitement. And it's also just the maturity of that group that have come through together. You know, yeah. Petrarca and Oliver and Gaunt, they've been together for 7 years now. So that chemistry and that cohesion now has been built over a long period of time. Viney as well.
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, they're at perfect stage of their careers, aren't they, to be as devastating as we saw on Saturday night. We need to take a short break. 17 minutes past 7. Ben Rutten is with us as we continue to analyse the grand final. Gaz will be joining Tim shortly. We'll turn our attention to the Bombers, of course, and what's ahead for them when we come back on Breakfast after this.
Smarter, quieter, safer. Garage doors redefined. Discover more at 4ddoors.com.au. Kogan credit cards. No annual fees, amazing rewards, and complimentary Kogan First membership.
Breakfast with Gary Lyon and Tim Watson.
Welcome back. Hopefully, Gaz to join you shortly. Ben Rutten is our guest as we look back on the grand final and look ahead to the Bombers. We talk about footy being a copycat industry, Ben. So how closely analysed are those finals, and how much does that actually change something you might do for next year? Or is it just a little tiny bit of it?
Probably more little tiny bits at the moment for us. I mean, we're still trying to embed a consistent brand amongst our own group. Certainly, you've got to look at the personnel and, the capacity and the capability of your own squad and what you think they're capable of doing, and how do we keep progressing and evolving that. But certainly, the finals do play a fairly significant role. I mean, that's as I said before, we want to be playing week in, week out a brand of footy that's going to hold up and stack up in finals. And I think that's where Melbourne and the Doggies, got through to that last game, is because they've built some confidence and really strong reliability in their game over a 23-week period. And I think that's all we saw from Melbourne was, the confidence that they've built throughout the whole season coming out on the biggest day.
Are you a strong enough contested bull side yet, do you think?
No, look, that's certainly an area which we need to keep going, keep building on. And it's just the craft and that consistency of what we do. And I think our final was a great example of that, where I think we were, we're going pretty well against the Bulldogs, up by 10 or 12 at halftime. And we probably missed a few opportunities in front of goal, that hurt us on the scoreboard. And the game kind of flipped on its head in that second half, and you know, the weather made the game a little bit more contested, and that was where the Bulldogs just shone through a little bit more and overwhelmed us a little bit around the contest. So that's certainly an area which we need to continue to evolve and progress, and you know, just build that consistency amongst our group.
Do you need to look elsewhere and to other clubs during this trade period coming up, Ben? Are you going to be active?
Look, if we think it's going to strengthen and improve our squad, then we certainly will be. But I think, yeah, probably what we did this time last year was I was really keen. I thought we had a lot of things within our squad that we hadn't uncovered yet. So I was really keen to, rather than looking elsewhere, to actually continue to develop and see what we've got on our list. And I think we had some really strong examples of that over the course of the last season with Jaden Laverty. Yeah. You know, we had going down back Tommy Cutler, even in the last 6 or 7 weeks going down back, Darcy Parrish. So to be able to continue to develop the guys that we had on the list was a really important priority for us. And I think there's still a hell of a lot of improvement we've still got within our list. So I'm really keen to exhaust that as much as we can over the next, you know, 1, 2, 3 years. But certainly if we think we can improve our list externally, we'll certainly be doing that. But it's not going to compromise, you know, some of the plans that we've got in place.
Would you like another big-bodied inside midfield type player?
Again, we saw probably 3 games out of Jai Caldwell, and I got some really, really high hopes on Jai. I think he's he was probably our best performer throughout the pre-season in terms of our training and our pre-season games. And right. I was just really disappointed that we lost him in the second round. I mean, he's a third going into his fourth year player. He's a big, strong inside player. He's got fantastic hands. I think he'll really be able to complement, you know, Darcy and Merritt and Shiel and those kind of guys in and around the ball as well. So, again, as another example, I think rather than looking elsewhere, I think I'm really keen to work out what we've got in our squad, because I think we've got a fair bit of capacity still there.
The Josh Dunkley thing won't be revisited?
No, look, it's not on the table at this point.
And Dylan Shiel, is he still a work in progress as to exactly where you would like to play him, or where he best fits for you to play the way you want to play?
Again, I think we just didn't see him for 4 months this season. I think he'd been developing over the course of the summer as playing certainly on ball. I mean, I think he had as good a strike rate at centre bounce as any player in the competition early in the season. And then we just missed him. So I think to be able to play in and around the ball and ahead of the ball, I think that's going to be where Dylan best suits. But I've got no doubt that he'll be able to come in. I mean, he's an A-grade player. So to be able to get him and Caldwell into that midfield mix that we didn't have for large parts of the season this year, I think it's going to really strengthen our playing group.
Would Darcy Parrish have become the player he did if you didn't have those injuries?
It's a good question. I mean, part of it is, yeah, Darcy's pre-season and his off-season really set him up for a great season. So I'd no doubt that Darcy was going to have a breakout season this year. And probably at the time, early in the season, I wouldn't have thought he was going to spend as much time on ball. But certainly circumstances and some injury gives him some opportunity, and that's what injury does, and that's what opportunity does. You know, whether it be via injury or whatever, to be able to, sometimes all someone needs is a bit of an opportunity. And yeah, Jaden Laverty's another one who was ended up being, you know, kind of such a rock for us down back, and
he was unbelievable.
Yeah, some of the
jobs that was an off summer decision. I mean, they're some of the great credit that you and the coaching group should get out of last year, those moves to set up a brand new backline effectively.
Yeah, well, I think you look at our backline in round one. I think, yeah, with Heppel, Hind,
Stewart,
Laverty, I think Redmond and Ridley were the only two kind of that have played there, and they'd played all of 30 games at the start of the season. So we've got this backline who, you know, we know generally that to play in a premiership, that backline has to be a group that's played together for 100, 150 games of footy. You know, that's been a pretty consistent thing in some of the best teams. So for us, we've kind of got a brand new backline. They're working together. They're starting to work out how they all move and how they mix and where they fit in. And, you know, I thought the evolution of that backline group, and we had a new coach as well in Gia come across as well. So to see the transformation and that group really evolve over the course of year, over the course of year, was one of the real highlights for me.
You've got some really good, strong leaders emerging at the club now. Dyson Heppel obviously is the captain. He's been the captain for a long period of time. Is that a conversation you have with him over the summer months as to whether or not he goes on as the captain of the club, or you make that change, or what's in your thinking now?
Yeah, look, I'm not sure just yet. I mean, I think Hep's such a strong leader for us. You know, around the group, he's, you know, the consistency, the stability of him, he's always looking to improve. He's a great role model for our group at the moment. And yeah, I was really pleased that Dice could get his game back this season. And that's something that, after missing a couple of years of footy, and he's certainly, I think, in his own head, thinking, geez, how am I going to get myself back to where I've played before? And I was just so pleased that he could play as many games as he did and get his body really sound. And yeah, he's going to be now hitting a pre-season, you know, without any of those doubts or fears that he's not going to be able to get back and play. He's now hitting the ground running and with a clean bill of health. And I think that the guys we've got underneath him, I think the development and the evolution of Zach Merritt, I think we've always known he's a great player. But this year in particular, I think the way he's actually starting to influence others, he's starting to bring people along on the journey, has just really taken his leadership and his influence over the group to another level. And then there's Darcy Parrish, there's Ridley, there's Langford, even Sam Draper.
McGrath.
Those guys are now starting to get a bit ahead of steam up and really drive the group forward.
How important, sorry, just on that point.
I think Tim could talk about Essendon.
No, just one final question on Zach Merritt, because we do need to take a break. But one final question on Zach Merritt. How important was it to get him to re-sign?
I think it was critical. I mean, Zach is... you know, he's such a professional, such a driven leader. And, you know, the fact that he's committed to the club for a long period of time and you know, hopefully to the end of his career was just a really important decision for our playing group. And I think, I got asked about it nearly every week. It was never something I was concerned about. You know, I'd been working really closely with Zach, having really strong, good, honest conversations from this time last year with Zach about the footy club, where we can take it forward, how he could grow his game, how he could continue to evolve into a bigger, better, stronger leader. You know, his desire and his intent is never questioned. So I knew I had a really special person to work with there and a really strong ally that I needed to make sure that I bring on the journey with me. And yeah, I think the way he's done that throughout the course of the season, committed to the club long term, is just a really strong show of faith, and he's going to be a fantastic leader and player for our footy club.
Ben, really appreciate you coming in, getting an analysis of the grand final, giving Tim a bit of Bomber Radio as well. As we look ahead, Jake Kelly, I've already added to your list. I know Luke Dunstan's put his hand up; he wants to join you as well. So, hey, good luck! Good luck for the season, for the summer down on the land there. You take a bit of
truck's
a nice
got
break.
A truck. Did you know?
Truck's got a truck. He's out there, and Gaz is going to join us very soon. He's going to take over, which is great. Thanks for coming in, Ben.
Thanks, Hutto. Thanks, Tim. Thanks for having me.
All right. The all-new Kia Niro electric SUV range, available as a hybrid, plug-in hybrid, and full electric. Let's get the latest news with Alex.